Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's done. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's done. He's done. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Woo-hoo. Kick up. Kick is on the way.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up. Throws. Touchdown.
Welcome in to another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Frat House Mike coming to you here this evening. And, well, don't look now, but look, there went week 10 in the NFL. Close. Gone forever. Close the books on that one. But it's interesting with week 10 now in the books and most teams now approaching the mark where they're looking at about six games remaining in the season. Suddenly all the conversation has kind of shifted to playoff talk, playoff speculation, playoff projections, who will, who won't, who's in, who's out, all that sort of fun stuff. What makes it even more interesting is that when we engage or allow ourselves to be engaged in these kinds of speculations, even this early, just past the midpoint of the season, take a look at it. Absent, noticeably absent from the playoff conversation, the Packers, the Vikings, the Panthers, the Cardinals. But the Lions are in there. This is, without a doubt, I mean, it's got to be one of the more interesting mix-ups we've seen come in, particularly over in the NFC that I can remember in some time, where some of the major powerhouses getting kind of shook up there from what we've known them over the past couple of seasons. We're going to take a look at some of that here this evening over the next 90 minutes or so. We're going to take a look at that Packers loss this past week to the Tennessee Titans. And I got to tell you something, the Titans didn't just beat them. Holy smokes. I mean, they were out to show that the Packers really are nothing more than just a middle of the road team. Absolutely incredible performance that the Tennessee Titans put on, but you got to give a little bit to the Tennessee Titans as well. I mean, they're showing more and more. They're an improved team. I brought up those Vikings. And now they're four losses in a row. Four losses in a row to the Minnesota Vikings. And now suddenly a lot of people are saying, what were we thinking at the beginning of the season? Did we actually say Super Bowl with the Minnesota Vikings? Huh? Minnesota Vikings are now 5-4, and they just got beaten this past weekend by the Washington Redskins. Out of that very, very tough, did I say tough, NFC East division, where the Eagles came out and defensively put it to the Atlanta Falcons, holding off the most prolific offensive team in the entire league, held them back to just one touchdown this past weekend. Did I say that the NFC East was a tough division? Take a look at the NFC East. Every single team in there right now with a winning record, all of them, possibility at a shot at getting into the playoffs. But let's not forget the best of all, and that's the 8-1 Dallas Cowboys. Did I mention how tough the NFC East was? It's just stupid. 8-1 Dallas Cowboys, and suddenly they're now being mentioned, not just in the conversation of playoffs, but how about Super Bowl? They knocked off the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday in what was really just a classic kind of a rematch of the old Super Bowl classic games that we remember from days gone by. And then you've got the Seattle Seahawks out there in the NFC West, who, when you take a look at the standings, currently have the second best record in the NFC. But somehow or another, folks, is anybody else out there in agreement with me? It just doesn't feel like they're the second best team in the NFC. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it. But gosh darn it, they went into Foxborough and they beat the New England Patriots. Does that really matter to the Patriots? We'll find out. We're going to talk about all those things. And if anybody wants to jump in here with us, hey, don't hesitate. I'll tell you who I'd love to hear from. I would love to hear from fans of both, one or the other, or both, the Green Bay Packers or the Minnesota Vikings. I'd love to get some fan thoughts on what's the fan base feel about both those teams, particularly the Green Bay Packers at this point. But certainly the Minnesota Vikings as well. But if anybody wants to jump in with us here this evening, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, jump in our Blog Talk Radio chat room and leave us a comment there. Be more than happy to answer your questions or bring your comment to the air from the chat room, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. There you go, at Twitter. Twitter again, at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get me there. All right, let me get my co-host in here to help me out ironing out some of this stuff, particularly what's going on over there in the NFC North. What an interesting topsy-turvy situation we've got going on over there, Brandon. NFC North, we now have the Detroit Lions up at the top of the division there. Who'd have thunk this going into the season? You'd have the Green Bay Packers sitting at the Minnesota Vikings mired in a four-game winning streak. And, well, don't look now, but, hey, the Detroit Lions have just come in and filled the void. Really crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, but with all that said, you know, all three teams are within a game of each other. And they all still have to play because they're all, you know, they all still have division games left. So, you know, it's not like you can, you know, throw dirt on the Vikings and Packers and call them dead because, you know, there's plenty of games to go. Matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now. The Packers end their last two games are with the Vikings coming to Lambeau and then at Detroit. So, you know, yeah, I don't think anybody would have expected it, but these teams all have a chance to, as they say, right the ship. You know, I don't think there's going to be, if, you know, there may or may not be a wild card out of that division. I mean, the East is so strong. You know, you may see two wild card teams, especially with Washington having that tie. That may help influence things as the season goes on. You know, when we get down to the wild card, you know, tiebreakers and stuff. But I still, you know, Detroit, if you look, give it the eye test, Detroit looks like the best team right now in that division. So, you know, the other two need to, you know, right the ship, as they say. I have a feeling Mike Zimmer kind of lost his team. I don't know if you remember back a few weeks ago, he basically called them out as being soft and playing soft. He said some words about players you generally avoid as a coach. And I'm wondering if that team's kind of quitting on him a little bit, you know, based on some of those comments. Now, I don't know if he can't, you know, I'm not saying he can't possibly figure out a way to get it back, but, you know, I think some of that stuff might be self-inflicted, you know, with the Minnesota Vikings right now. You know, as far as Green Bay, I can't tell you what's wrong. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is all over the place in the passing game. All his, you know, receivers are, you know, some are dropping balls, others. It's so hard to put a finger on what, you know, what exactly is going on with that team. They can't stop anybody on defense. They got, you know, problem after problem.
And while there are certainly, as you point out, there are certainly more, you know, there's more than enough time, more than enough games, as you point out, and particularly the way the schedule is set up right now, where we mm-hmm. know that the NFL, does a very good job in setting the schedule up where there will be a lot of division games, you know, all across the league in those final few games of the season. But at the same time, and I think as you're also rightly pointing out, there's something that's frequently referred to in football analysis as trends. And the trends right now are certainly not lending themselves to the Minnesota Vikings or the Green Bay Packers. The trends just aren't there, which really is what's most bizarre about it. Because these were two teams, and I think particularly the Vikings coming in, and, you know, you're bringing up those comments by Mike Zimmer. If I'm not mistaken, those were immediately post-game comments. In other words, they weren't the Monday. They weren't the Monday after the game. They were like immediately after the game had concluded. It was that Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken, after those comments were made, Brandon, that was when North Turner up and said, okay, guess what? I think I'm going to walk away.
Actually, I think that was a week apart.
Was it?
I think it was the next week, yeah. But it was right after the Eagles game. You know, the Eagles took him out of their, you know, undefeated. And, you know, if you remember from watching that game, you know, we watched that the Vikings look horrible. They look sloppy. They haven't looked good since that game, you know. You know, but like I said, all that being said, you know, these teams still have an opportunity. The Vikings actually are playing Detroit on Thanksgiving Day in the early game. So, you know, they have an opportunity, you know, not all that far away to, you know, kind of help themselves and get healthy. Now, that's a tough, tall order because we all know Detroit plays really well on Thanksgiving, whether they're a good team or not. They seem to get up for that game, but, you know, the Vikings kind of need it more.
And it's a short week. Minnesota is going to be coming off of playing Arizona this coming week. Now, Minnesota is at home. Arizona is coming there to play them. You know, two anomalous teams right there. I mean, those are two teams that we, you know, as I'm opening up the program here today, I'm talking about, you know, what does the playoff picture look like right now? And who's noticeably absent? Well, and I mentioned the Packers, the Vikings, but then you go on to the Panthers, you know, and we've talked a lot about the Panthers here on this program. You throw in the Cardinals as well. The Cardinals are another team that so many people thought, okay, well, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, NFC, a strong team right there, going to be in the playoff hunt. Yeah, you take a look at a game like this coming Sunday between Arizona and Minnesota. I'm looking at the line right now. It's a pick 'em. No wonder it's a pick 'em. Nobody can seem to make head or tail of what this team is. Either team. We can't make head or tail of what either team is. So, you know, they got a tough fight there, and then they're going to be playing the early game, which, you know, hey, in the year that it should be, where everybody was talking so high on Minnesota, wow, isn't that a great 1 o'clock game on Thanksgiving Day? That's a fabulous 1 o'clock game on Thanksgiving. It might still very well be. So that's a good one. I haven't looked far enough ahead to determine all the games on Thanksgiving Day yet. I'm just dealing with week 11 at this point. But I just find it interesting, you know, because it's just a who'd have thunk it sort of thing. You know, who'd have thunk that we'd be sitting here talking about both the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings, you know, not being in the picture at the moment right now. Since we're talking about the Packers,
well,
take a look at
I don't think it's fair to say they're not in the picture. They're in the picture.
Well,
I mean,
but
they're not leading the division, but they, you know, they're, you know, one is tied, the other's only a game back. I wouldn't put them out of the picture anyway. Not
well,
yet.
I don't mean completely out of the picture. I mean, for that matter, I could say the Philadelphia Eagles are completely out of the picture, but that's not true either. But
no,
if the season concluded, if the season concluded right now today, neither one of those teams gets into the playoffs. That's the bottom line. So, and that's where that's where I'm seeing the analysis coming is hey, if the season closed today, what does it look like? And like I said, you've got that silly little thing that everybody likes to point to, which is called trends, and the trends are not setting up. But anyhow, as I pointed out, you know, we have the Green Bay Packers on the list for this evening. Let's take a look at that game from this past Sunday, because, you know, I was sitting back. I was watching that game early on, right from the first quarter on, and I couldn't believe what I was watching as Tennessee rolled up 21-0. On the Green Bay Packers in the first quarter. I almost knew at that point, I was like, this is not going to end well. And ultimately it didn't. 47-25, Tennessee roared onto the Green Bay Packers and dropped the Green Bay Packers to 4-5 on the season, while Tennessee moved to 5-5. In some respects, I've got to be honest with you. I kind of like the fact that Tennessee is showing the proper kind of improvement from what everybody kind of, well, I guess, was hoping we were going to be seeing, as they had gotten Marcus Mariota in last year's draft, and they now seem to be taking that next step. But I got to tell you something, Marcus Mariota must have had, I don't know if it is, but it has to go down as one of his best, if not his best day on the field as a quarterback. Mariota was 19 of 26 for 295 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 149.8 passer rating. Honest to God, whoever had him on their fantasy team, that was just an incredible day. In the meantime, Aaron Rodgers was having to put the ball in the air 51 times, 31 of 51 for 371 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions, and a 79.8 passer rating. Tennessee brought the defense to this game on this particular day, sacking Rodgers 5 times. They hit him another 6 times. They intercepted him twice. The defense was just swarming all over the Green Bay Packers. I think that's what surprised me a little bit watching this game as well. No ground game to speak of. James Starks had 33 yards. Ty Montgomery had 9 yards. So without that ground game going for Green Bay, they were, you know, a one-dimensional, two-dimensional team and become somewhat predictable. It was kind of an embarrassing loss for the Green Bay Packers. Good win for the Tennessee Titans, that, you know, a growing team that they are, but DeMarco Murray, holy smoke, 17 carries for 123 yards. So no defense on the Green Bay side of the ball, great defense on the Tennessee side of the ball. It was just one of those days, I guess, for the Green Bay Packers. I don't know.
Yep, DeMarco Murray actually had a throwing touchdown too, his first ever.
That's right.
I forgot. Had a halfback option to, what's his name? The tight end, Delanie Walker.
Yep.
So he you know, he put it, he earned his check, you know, yesterday on Sunday. that whole Tennessee Titan team, actually, you know, if you look at it, you know, they've improved from the beginning of the year.
Yep.
They look much better. They're 5-5. They're in the division. I don't think the Texans are particularly strong. I think the only thing going for them is they got like they have an extra game in the loss column on Tennessee, where, you know, Tennessee hasn't had their bye yet. So once Tennessee has their bye and, you know, you see how where Houston lands there, you know, they'll see how they, you know, how they're going to shake up with a shot at winning the division. But I mean, even worst case, they're only two games back. I mean, that's not insurmountable, but, you know, it's still a tough road in the NFL, you know. So they're doing pretty good, though. You can't argue with what the improvement, as you pointed out there, from this whole Titans team.
Absolutely. It's you know, for Tennessee fans, it's got to be something that they look at and or have to look at and say, hey, there's real reason for optimism here with this team right now, because they look a lot better. I mean, 5-5, that's a dramatic improvement. What did they have all last season? I think they only had 5 wins maybe all of last season. In fact, I can pull that up here real quick. Just curious what Tennessee had. Tennessee had 3 wins last season. They were 3-13 for the entire season. So, hey, whatever they do from this point forward is an improvement over last year. So, and as you point out, just really, you know, at worst case scenario, only 2 games behind the Houston Texans. Tennessee will not get their bye until now week 13, which is the first week of December. So they will go into the final 4 weeks of the season, you know, coming off of a break, which is really tremendous. That's if they can make it to week 13, that's terrific. So,
well, you and I were talking about that a little bit last night. How the buys this week, you know, or this year rather, are later. Or something. Yeah, odd. Something doesn't seem right. It does seem like, you know, they're running them later. You had pointed out they had skipped the Thanksgiving week altogether, so that could be part of it.
Yeah, I'm wondering, too, if they spread more out. Because there were only 2 weeks this year where we had 6 teams off on a bye, only 2. And I'm wondering if there were more weeks in previous seasons, so therefore they were able to get done with the buys earlier than this point. I'd have to go back to last year's schedule too to see whether in fact there were any buys during Thanksgiving week. I don't recall whether there weren't or weren't, but there aren't any this year. So, but anyhow, now, just curious, Green Bay, who does Green Bay have this coming week? Green Bay is going to be playing at Washington, and that is the 8:30 game on Sunday night. Right now, Washington is a 2.5-point favorite in that game. You know, winnable game for Green Bay, but it's an interesting one. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Washington's been playing pretty solid. I mean, I don't know. What's the line that you said on that again?
2.5 in favor of Washington. Washington is at home. Washington is at home.
I don't like that line, to be honest with you. I'm not loving that line, because if you think about it, I don't know. That line's telling me that they think the Packers are a better team straight up than the Redskins. I don't know about that. I don't like that line.
It's a Green Bay line. There's no doubt about that. That's a Green Bay line. So, I don't know. I think on paper, Brandon, you'd have to say Green Bay is a better team. It's just that Green Bay hasn't been playing like the better team. What the only thing, in my opinion, that Green Bay really is missing, Green Bay is missing right now is a ground game. Their defense is a little bit suspect at times, because it seems inevitably they have, Green Bay has one of the highest over-unders on the board almost every single week compared to, you know, teams like Oakland and, you know, it's either Oakland, Atlanta, and then Green Bay. That's generally the way it goes, you know, or Atlanta, Oakland, and Green Bay. So Green Bay's defense is not terrific. But offensively, really the only thing on paper they're missing is really a consistent running game.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, all their backs are injured, though.
Yep.
So they're kind of in a tough spot. You know what I mean? I mean, Eddie Lacy's already, I believe, had surgery. Starks, I think, had some kind of surgery. They brought, from Kansas City, Nile Davis, for a cup of coffee, and that didn't seem to go well. Ty Montgomery's not doing horrible. And
but they're not
pretty
even
much
using
seemingly
them.
Got the job.
They're not
using
them.
That's probably, that's a good observation. I think that's part of the problem with this offense right now. They're too one-dimensional. You know, they need to figure out, a way to, to spread things out a little more. In other words, like, there's no fear of a running game at the moment.
Absolutely not. And they seem to be, with Montgomery, they seem to be, and I keep hearing this, and you see it, they almost prefer to use him as a receiving back. Which, to me, in the absence, why can't he do, he should be doing both. He should be pulling double duty the way, we see somebody like Darren Sproles does here in Philadelphia. I don't understand it. Why they're not, he only had 3 carries last week. Brandon, Ty Montgomery did. 3 carries for 9 yards.
James Starks looks like he actually had some rushing carries. I thought he was on the shelf, but apparently he did play. He had 7 carries for 33 yards. So, I don't know. They only had 13 carries to Aaron Rodgers, 55 pass attempts. I think that's not true. Aaron Rodgers had 51. I guess Brett Hundley got in the game for 4. They need to figure out a better balance. And, that lack of a running game right now is hurting them. They need to come up with a better, formula, better mix, because, maybe they're too readable. The defense is loading up for the pass every down. They don't have to worry about a run. You know what I mean? They're not even concerned about them running. So, I think that might be something that, needs to get looked at over the next couple of weeks if the Packers think they're going to improve at all.
I
wonder if it's a factor of play calling or if it's just a factor of the personnel they have available at the moment.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I was just about to ask that because, frequently you will see teams in the position that Green Bay was the other day. And remember I said that, Green Bay got behind early in this game. They were down 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. Was it a situation where Green Bay felt that they didn't have the time, they didn't have the luxury of running the ball, of progressively working their way down the field, that they wanted to go and pick up as many points as they possibly could as quickly as they could? If that's the case, and we frequently see teams do that. We see teams, fall into that trap. Oh my gosh, we're behind. Abandon the run game. I don't know if that's the case or not. If you take a look at the box score, and as you just pointed out, there were only 13 rushing attempts, and probably really even less than that, because I doubt very much those 3 plays that Aaron Rodgers ran for were designed. I would bet he was probably running for his life. They weren't designed plays. So there were 10 plays. There were 10 plays that were designed to run. That was it that they called. All the rest of them were passing plays. So, you know, it would appear that it was a situation where they just said, but although your point's well taken, is it a situation where they don't have confidence in Starks and Montgomery? Or is it that they said, scrap the game plan, we got to pass from this point forward because, gosh darn it, look at here, we're, you know, it's 35-16 at the half. I know
in the past the Packers have had faith and confidence in Starks. Starks isn't 100%. I can understand why there's probably a bit of hesitation there. So, you know, I don't know if any of that's factoring into the, you know, the formula, as they say. You know, this team before, you know, we were commenting, you know, here at the frat house with Eddie Lacy. When they had Eddie Lacy, he was a beast. And he came in healthy. He came in trim. He came in with a new attitude, ready to kick, you know, kick some tail. And he certainly was. He was doing a great job, you know. The fact he got injured, you know, it's almost a shame, really, because of how well they were doing up until that point. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how they can replace that.
He was having such a tremendous season. I was so impressed with Eddie Lacy because, you know, we know what kind of a what he had to, we know what he's been through to come back to where he was. The guy was terribly, terribly maligned. And with all due respect,
Mike McCarthy was calling him fat at the end of last year.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, with due respect, rightfully so, he was maligned. In my opinion, it was a righteous maligning that he was taking, because Eddie Lacy looked like complete crap. He looked like he was running with his feet in buckets of cement. But my gosh, how he turned it around for the short part of the season that he played this year. And God, that had to be terribly, terribly demoralizing for him. I mean, seriously.
But when your coach is calling you out for being fat?
Well,
yeah.
No, but to be able to come back and have a season like you were having and then to have to end up getting an injury like that and you're out.
I understand.
What's demoralizing. You know, now he's probably sitting back being a couch potato again. You know what I mean? And he'll have to go through it all over again.
Well, I believe he had ankle surgery, so he probably is very limited in what he can and can't do, you know, physically. You know, he's going to have to, you know, rehab the ankle.
Mm-hmm. A lot of talk about the security at this point right now, Brennan, of Mike McCarthy. That if this continues, in fact, McCarthy might be on the chopping block. I don't know. It doesn't seem quite right to me. I don't know, unless there really truly is something wrong with the team that perhaps maybe, you know, they're not paying attention to him or something, you know, they've lost, you know, you hear the old lines about losing the locker room. There was some talk last week that there was some sniping going on among some teammates publicly to the media that they, you know, there were some who shot John going on, some finger pointing, and, you know, that's never a good sign when you see that sort of thing happening. Where the team's coming apart. And frequently when you do see that or hear about that sort of thing, it is kind of an indication that there might be something more systemic wrong internally in the clubhouse. I don't know. Any thoughts on it?
Well, I don't know if anything's wrong in the clubhouse. And if Mike McCarthy's job's in danger, that would be, I think, a just absolutely stupid decision on the part of the Packers, because he's been such a good coach for so many years. I don't think he's the problem. I think the problem right now is this team. You know, they had too many injuries at one position, that being running back. I think they're trying to do the best they can to deal with that. You know, and that may just end up being a, you know, running back by committee between, you know, James Starks and Ty Montgomery. I don't know if it's possible that Betty Lacy can come back this season or not. I don't remember if he was designated to return or not. In the IR. So I'm not sure how that would play out. But they got to do something. If they can get Starks relatively healthy and mix Montgomery in, they might be okay. Starks has been a good back in the NFL for, quite a long time. It's not like it's new or anything.
Right. Well, all right. We'll continue to follow that one. It might just be a situation too, Brandon, where the level of expectation for the team being what it was going into the season, as it has been, for the better part of at least the past 4 or 5 seasons, the expectations for Green Bay Packers is always high. And then to have it kind of fall flat like this, particularly in light of the fact that their own rival, the Minnesota Vikings, are falling flat themselves. That's leading to a lot of kind of tension in the locker room as well. Why aren't we getting it done when these guys are handing it to us? I even said it. I've said it here now 2 weeks in a row. Second week in a row, you're seeing the Green Bay Packers not taking advantage of the fact that the Minnesota Vikings seem to be falling on their face. There's the Minnesota Vikings falling on their face, and the Green Bay Packers aren't taking advantage of it. And if we're saying it here, you got to know it's probably being said in the locker room. So anyhow, just some theory on my part.
No, it's good theory, and I agree with it. I just think, I don't know what can be done at this point. I think they're just, in a position, that's all. Hopefully they can figure that out.
Play it out, and we'll see where it goes. Now, I was just, the two top stories here this evening, Green Bay Packers and Minnesota Vikings. So we'll swap it over. We'll take a look at the Minnesota Vikings, who were on the road to play the Washington Redskins. And the Washington Redskins handed them their fourth loss in a row. 26-20, Minnesota drops down to 5-4. Washington edges up their record to 5-3-1. Minnesota Vikings last week, Sam Bradford wasn't horrible. 31-40, 307 yards, 2 touchdowns, an interception. He was only sacked 3 times. He was rushed a little bit. 104.9 passer rating. When you take a look at this box score, it's somewhat reminiscent of the one we just took a look at, the Green Bay Packers, where no ground game whatsoever really to speak of for Minnesota, but we've talked about that ever since Adrian Peterson went out. There are rumors that Peterson might be back this week, I'm hearing, which I think that would be an immediate shot in the arm for this team. Take a look, though.
Is he going to be healthy, though? Is that the question? That would be my only concern. What level of health is Peterson? Is he ready to go full steam, be the course back he's always been? Or he, what condition is he in, I think, would be my question.
Yeah, and I haven't read enough about it. I just heard it in passing that there has been rumor that he could be available this week. So I don't know enough about what Peterson's status is at this point. This is why it would be great if we could have somebody from the Minnesota region call in. I would love to hear from somebody in Minnesota. 347-826-9964. If anybody out there anybody who's a Minnesota fan, you don't even have to be from the region. If you're a Minnesota Vikings fan, give us a holler here. Let us know what your thoughts are on the Vikings. But I don't know enough about Peterson's current status to be able to speak to it as to whether he'd be 100% ready to go, or whether we're talking about a situation where he's available to come back and start practicing. I don't know if that's the case. It might be another week or two before he actually sees the field. I don't know. I'm not sure at this point. But when I hear somebody mention in passing he might be available. It sounds to me like he would be available for the game. Continuing though, take a look at the box score from this Vikings game. When you take a look at the receivers for the Vikings, I guess the one that jumps out at you is the kind of day that Stephon Diggs had. 13 receptions for 164 yards. The only thing he didn't have was a touchdown. 164 yards through the air. Kyle Rudolph had a touchdown. Adam Thielen had a touchdown. That doesn't seem right. Stephon Diggs should have had a touchdown, for God's sakes. You get 164 yards, you deserve one. But like I said, Washington did knock. They weren't able to get back there and sack Bradford a lot, but they did knock him around quite a few times. He was hit around by that Washington defense. Washington just seems to quietly keep finding a way to win with what I consider to be really kind of a no-name team. I mean, they're kind of a no-name team, but they're quietly just keeping pace in the NFC East. In fact, in the NFC East this past weekend, every single team in that division won. So nobody lost any ground. Everybody kept pace with each other. That's why I kind of think the bigger story out of this game with Washington and Minnesota is the fact that Minnesota takes the loss one more time and drops now their fourth game in a row. It cannot be weighing well on the Minnesota folks. I mean, seriously, on that whole team, and even they can't be feeling too terribly good about themselves, I would think.
Well, here's the problem I think that Minnesota's seen, and we've seen this now because it's apparent that the NFC North is playing the NFC East this year, because, you know, we've already seen the Vikings and the Eagles. Now we see the Redskins. So, you know, they got a tough draw there, you know, because as you pointed out earlier, you know, the NFC East is probably one of the best divisions in football right now anyway. And Washington, you know, has been quiet, but they, you know, it's hard to put a finger on this team, on either one of these teams, really, you know, as to, you know, why they are where they are. In other words, Minnesota, yes, there's been issues. There's been obviously some kind of internal strife within the coaching staff with the whole North Turner thing, which I still, to this day, we have not really seen any rumors as to why or what happened. You know, I thought by now we'd have heard something, but no. Washington, on the other hand, you know, they're just playing consistent for the most part. They're doing what they got to do to win. You know, this game was at home. They won their home game. You know, I understand what you're saying, that the Vikings, you know, probably needed the game more, but because of the division Washington's in, they can't afford to not keep pace with everybody else who keeps winning. You know what I mean? So it's, you know,
absolutely.
It's a tough choice for these two teams right now. And it's not going to get any easier. I mean, we've already talked a little bit about, you know, what Minnesota is coming up, especially on Thanksgiving Day. You know, Washington, you know, they still got to play, you know, most of the NFC East again. You know, and that's, you know, that's going to be, you know, not an easy job. I mean, they did beat the Giants.
They beat the Eagles.
And the Eagles, right. So, you know, they're not doing too bad in the division, at least so far.
Nope. But, you know, what's interesting, Brandon, is that I think really when it comes right down to it, you're saying you can't put your finger on either one of these teams. But when it comes to the Washington Redskins, I guess the word is, You can't put your finger on their identity. You know what I mean? What are the Washington Redskins? What's their identity? You know what I mean? You know, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and you say, okay, well, hey, early on, you know, and we're only nine games in. But clearly the identity of the Philadelphia Eagles is Carson Wentz. The identity of the Dallas Cowboys rookie seasons. And frankly, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know if the identity of the Dallas Cowboys is Dak Prescott. I would sooner say it's more Zeke Elliott. And I think when you go up there to the New York Giants, you still always have to go back to Eli Manning. You can't do that with Kirk Cousins.
Why not?
And I can't. I can't do it. You can. Can you do it? Can you? Can,
no.
I don't know.
He's leading them to, you know, lots of wins. They signed him. You know, he's their quarterback for the foreseeable future. You know, I don't, you know, I think you might be selling him a little short. That's all. I mean, because you don't, you know, you may not be a Kirk Cousins fan. I don't know, but it's a tough situation. You know what I mean?
No.
You can't take away from the fact that they're winning. He's winning games. He's their starting quarterback. You know, they were. I saw them yet last night on the Monday night show. They were joking around. Apparently they always play a little bit of, you know, funny stuff from the post game press conferences. And apparently the Washington media said something about his durability because he's, you know, playing so many games without getting injured, et cetera, et cetera. And he's like, don't jinx me. You know, it came off as a pretty, pretty funny moment, but you know, he's not the biggest guy. He looks like a mid-sized quarterback to me on the field. I mean, he's not Drew Brees small, but he's not, you know, he's not 6'6", you know, like some of these other guys out there. So, you know, I hate to take it away from him. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. I guess what it comes down to is, when I first initially said that the Washington Redskins are quietly keeping pace, they're quietly winning games, that's what it comes down to. Kirk Cousins, there's no wow factor with him. There's no he's not a household name. He doesn't have that extra pizzazz, you know, that we see from other people. And that all ties in with what they're identity is, which is just this kind of quiet team, you know, kind of like an Alex Smith, very similar kind of thing to Alex Smith. I'm looking at Kirk Cousins' numbers right now for this season, and what you say is well taken. Just get a load of Kirk Cousins' numbers here for a moment. Maybe I'm reading them more for my own self, just to kind of pound it into my own head. But he's got a 66.9 completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 94.8 passer rating, 302 yards per game. And he's ranked right now fourth in the league in yards. Fourth in the league, quarterback.
Not too shabby.
It's not. It's really not. So.
And his touchdown to interception ratio, you know,
it's good.
It's good. Horrible.
Well,
yeah,
no, it's good.
It's better if you can keep it like 3-1. You know, he's like at 50%. That's better than a lot of other quarterbacks in the league. But I think the ideal goal is 3-1. You know, and lower is good. Is like really good. I mean, you know, look at your top quarterbacks. You know, they don't throw as many interceptions. He might be a little high in that area. And I might just be being picky too. I mean, but, you know, he deserves some credit. Maybe because he's a quiet, unassuming type of guy.
That's my point. That's my point. There it is. Right. That's exactly what I said. He's kind of like an Alex Smith. He's kind of like Alex Smith, isn't he?
Hmm.
I mean,
I guess.
Well, wait, think about it. I mean, what does Alex Smith do? He just wins games, right? I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs right now are what are they, 6-7?
Seven.
Or hold on.
They're 7-2.
7-2 and leading the AFC West right now. They're just ahead of the Oakland Raiders on a tiebreaker. The Kansas City Chiefs, once again, here we go. the two teams, Washington Redskins and Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion, are very similar from the standpoint. They're two very unassuming, not high glitz, not high glamour kinds of teams that what do? They just win. That's all they do. They just win. Talking about touchdown to quarterback, touchdown to interception ratio. I'll throw one at you here, Brandon, that I'm just noticing, looking at the quarterback rankings. How about Derek Carr at 17 touchdowns and just 3 interceptions? Wow. Wow. That Oakland Raiders team is just – they're just fun. Honest to God, the Oakland Raiders are just fun. Seriously.
Yep.
They were on a bye last week. I'm actually looking forward to seeing them back this week. All right, so anyhow,
Who do they play this week?
The Raiders are on Monday night. They're on Monday night. They're coming from Mexico.
Oh, that's
they'll
right.
Be playing,
that's a tech
yeah,
team.
Yeah, they'll be playing. Houston. Houston in Mexico City. So
that should be a win for the Raiders.
They are favored by 6 points at this moment. So,
and I do remember seeing the lineup or the graphic on ESPN for that last night. It does look like they're considering this as an Oakland home game. So maybe because their stadium's so bad, they just said, okay, you only get 7 home games this year. You play one in Mexico.
I'm going to be honest with you. So, they were showing pictures of that stadium. It didn't look much better than what they're currently playing in personally.
Mm.
That stadium did not exactly look glamorous. That's just
I didn't see any shots of it, so I can't. I missed that part of it, but
I can't speak to its internal plumbing. But I will say that on the outside,
well, it's got to be better than the Coliseum.
Oh, you would think so.
Well, come on now. We've heard the stories about raw sewage backing up into the visitors' locker room during baseball season. You know, it sounds deplorable. I mean, deplorable.
That stadium that they will be playing in there at Mexico City is where they play the soccer matches. And
that should be a pretty good facility. They got soccer has money.
If I'm not mistaken, I'll check it when we get closer to the game, and on Sunday they'll be bringing it up, or on Monday rather, Monday night. But if I'm not mistaken, it holds substantially more than most of our NFL stadiums. You know, you're talking in the areas now of like some of our college football stadiums when you start talking that.
In like 100,000 people kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where you're at.
I'm curious how many people will show up for it now. I wonder what the response was in ticket sales. I'm curious.
I'm going to be honest with you. I would suspect you're going to see it sold out. That's going to be my bet.
Well, it's
that's
the first time.
Opinion.
So yeah,
exactly
the first
right.
Time, yeah. The first time, you know, might add to the novelty of it being a you know, a sellout, well attended
mm-hmm.
event kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it. I honestly didn't even realize, to be honest, that they were playing a game in Mexico City this year. I'm curious if it's going to be a regularly occurring event or not.
Yeah. I had forgotten about it. I when they brought it back up again, it didn't surprise me because I do remember us all talking about it.
I didn't know it was official though. I know the whole London thing. You know, they have multiple games there now, so you know that's clearly not going away anytime soon. I just didn't realize they were trying to get into Mexico as well.
Yeah, and I was thinking that there was supposed to be one more in London, but I might be wrong about that looking at the schedule because there are none this week and they're obviously not going to have any the week of Thanksgiving.
Right.
And once you come back from Thanksgiving, you're now into the final month of the NFL season. So I find it difficult to believe that they're going to have any in that final month. So I guess we're done with the London game.
Maybe not, though. Maybe that week 13, because the way the whole London thing is it's tied into your bye. Like, you get your bye after
you play that game.
London. Yeah, so,
right.
Yeah, I guess week 12 would be the last opportunity. Is that Thanksgiving week? Week 12?
Thanksgiving week would be Thanksgiving. Week 12.
Yeah,
and
so you're probably right then. We're probably done with them, I would imagine.
Well, week 13 is a bye. Yeah, right. There's two teams. There's at least two teams on bye week 13.
There's
and
none
right.
on week 14, right?
No, and you're right, though, but they wouldn't want anybody on a bye week. They wouldn't want anybody on a – yeah, right. There can't be. Right. There wouldn't be.
Right.
You're right.
Well, the deal was if you played in London –
you'd get a bye week.
You were
on
a bye the next week, right? Exactly.
Right, exactly. I got you. Okay.
That's kind of that's part of the schedule if you're going to do it, because, you know, it's so much travel and so many hours you're playing out of, you know. I mean, let's face it, they're playing the kickoff's 9:30 here in the morning. You know,
right.
I don't think any team's used to playing a football game, you know, that early. You know what I mean? And if it's a, you know, like a West Coast team, it's even more hours off. You know what I mean? So, you know, that I think that's just to give the players body clock kind of thing a chance to get right. That's why I think they try to give them that bye in the following week.
All right, well, let's get over. We'll take a look at the we're into our third game here that I had on the agenda for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that, we've been talking about the NFC East. We'll stick in the NFC East for a moment. That was the Philadelphia Eagles, who beat the Atlanta Falcons 24-15. And the Eagles were coming off of a two-week losing streak themselves. They had two games in a row that they had lost. And so they really, really – this is kind of a must-win for the Eagles, as I was pointing out. I mean, they still sit right now – technically in the basement of the NFC East, but every team in this division has a shot at the playoffs, most particularly the Dallas Cowboys, who probably have the division for all intent and purpose. I frankly find it difficult to believe that they're going to collapse and suddenly somebody's going to take over the division. But every
look
single
at the
team,
position they're in. Now, seriously, before we get into the game, the NFC East, Dallas Cowboys. You know, they got Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, you know, lighting things up. There's MVP boards, all kinds of stuff, you know, for these two guys. And they got Tony Romo and Alfred Morris sitting as their backups if there is any injury. Not
mm-hmm.
a bad position to be in.
Yep.
Think about that.
Yep.
I mean, how many other teams have we just talked about, like the Packers, who have running back issues? Yeah, we've heard, you know, we've seen the Cleveland Browns roll out, five or six quarterbacks this year? How does Dallas got to feel, you know, sitting right now like this? You know, and they're just like, as you said, they're on a tear. I don't see that team falling.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't want to get too far away from the game, but, you know, we've been talking about all these, you know, problems these other teams have, and Dallas is sitting pretty right now.
They sure are. They sure are.
Record-wise and player-wise.
the Eagles, though, had to keep pace, and that they did. They had to do it against the Atlanta Falcons. We've known about the Atlanta Falcons. They're the most prolific offensive team in the entire NFL. They have no defense. We know that. But damn, they can put up 40 points without blinking an eye if they need to. They couldn't do it, though, on Sunday. The Eagles held them to just 15, their lowest offensive output of the entire season. And, in fact, that 15 points came by way of just a single touchdown. The rest of the points were scored on field goals. So the Philadelphia Eagles defense came to play one more time, as we saw them do against the Pittsburgh Steelers and against the Minnesota Vikings. Carson Wentz was good. 25 of 36, 231 yards. A lot of short passes, but that's kind of been the game plan for Carson Wentz over the past number of weeks. 86.7 passer rating, no touchdowns, no interceptions. The thing that the Philadelphia Eagles did exceptionally well and unexpectedly exceptionally well was they ran the ball. Ryan Matthews, 19 carries for 109 yards. Wendell Smallwood, another 13 carries for 70 yards. In total, the Philadelphia Eagles ran the ball 38 times. Frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, I think this Atlanta a little bit by surprise, and their defense being as porous as it is, they just couldn't stop the Philadelphia Eagles from doing that. At least if the Eagles had put the ball in the air, the Atlanta Falcons, I think, probably knew that they were going to be the beneficiaries of the Philadelphia Eagles receivers who couldn't catch a ball if they had glue stuck to their hands, for God's sake. So the Falcons, won because the Eagles smartened up and played the right and played the right game plan. They went, you know what? We can't throw the ball anyhow because our receivers can't catch a damn ball. So why don't we run the ball against this really crappy-ass Atlanta defense and let's see if that works. Well, it worked, 24-15. Matt Ryan put the ball in the air 33 times. He went 18 of 33, 267 yards, one touchdown and one interception. It came down to the game plan, right, Brandon? I mean, that's what it came down to. And the Eagles played the right one. They really did. As infuriating as it was at times, to continue to try to watch Carson Wentz put the ball in the air to this completely inept group of receivers, ultimately the Eagles won because they did the right thing. They ran the ball 38 times.
Yeah, you're right. And it was a solid game plan. They got, three backs involved. All of them had a good average per carry. There's really nothing you can complain about in this game. And I'll be honest with you, I think the receivers caught 25 at 36. I mean, there's only 11 incomplete passes. I think the problem is when they do drop the ball, it's very noticeable. In other words, Carson Wentz is putting the ball in a catchable position, and these guys are not coming up with it when they should be. And I think that makes it more of a glaring issue than it, really is. I mean, Jordan Matthews seemed to have a decent game, for a receiver. Zach Ertz, has decent numbers. Darren Sproles is, consistent. This is the way he should be used. He had 9 catches out of the backfield, and then two rushes for 19 yards, when they were a surprise. So, I have to applaud them on using him correctly. Ryan Matthews is the one who should be getting the 20 carries a game, which they did, and it worked well. He got 19 carries. He had over 100 yards. I think that's right according to plan. So I hope they keep with this. I like the balance, in the offense. And, for the Eagles, you're correct in there. They don't have the greatest receiving core. You might as well, play to your strengths. And right now this, the running back core might be the strength of the team. And the offensive line can clearly run block, at least against the, as you called it, crappy ass Falcons defense. That's a good description of that defense too. clearly they couldn't stop anybody. I wonder if the strategy, because when you do run the ball a lot, you're keeping the time of possession more in your favor because you're not stopping the clock as much for the incomplete passes. I wonder if that was part of the strategy to keep Atlanta's offense off the field. In other words, if we do a nice ball control rushing attack, we can keep this high powered offense, off the field and not let them get into their rhythm. And, because they clearly never really got into their rhythm. Like we've seen games where, you get Ryan and he's just throwing, touchdown after touchdown to Julio and to Sanu and, You know, they never really got that rhythm going in this game, and that might just be, you know, part of, you know, the deeper, you know, a deeper part of the, you know, the planned rushing, you know, offense. In other words, like, you know, it's like it's twofold. We can exploit a weakness on their defense. You know, we can play to our strength as opposed to throw into, you know, our receivers who can't catch. And, you know, a nice side effect of all this is we'll keep that high-powered Atlanta offense off the field. And, you know, they never really got in their rhythm. So, you know, maybe it was a, you know, all-around good job by the coaching staff, game plan together.
I like your thinking. I'm not prepared enough to have that much confidence in Doug Peterson that he did that kind of second-level thinking. But
oh, come on now. You can't. That's not fair. Come on
okay,
now.
All right.
That's
all right.
Coaching 101. You know,
I think
I'll tell you what.
Leaving points on the board. So is not leaving points on the field. But
I
go ahead.
You could poll 32 NFL coaches, and if they had a chance to have their offense do what the Eagles offense did last week, they would take that over, you know, 40 passes and, you know, everything else. Because, you know, if you can get the good rushing game going and ball control offense going like that, you're keeping your defense off the field and rested. So I would venture a guess that if you asked 32 NFL coaches, you know, if they had their choice, they would love to have the kind of game play out the way the Eagles did. That's just my, you know. It's not fun to watch, and it can be very frustrating for the fan, as you are, you know.
Well, I was frustrated. Yeah, but I was frustrated with the air game. I was not frustrated with the ground game. I liked what I saw there. I was actually a little bit surprised by it. I'm going to be honest with you. I would suspect that you might see something similar from the Philadelphia Eagles this coming week because they're going to have to play the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. And
well, I think you have a different caliber defense, though.
Well,
this
you don't want to be throwing that ball against those corners. That's
I don't know that you're not going to get 5 points something per carry either against that defense. You know what I mean? That defense a little more stout on the defensive line and linebackers than the Atlanta Falcons are.
I think you pound the ball against them.
Yeah,
I think you.
But
you're not going to have to do.
I don't think the running game is going to be as successful though. I mean, I'm just going based on the few games we've watched. You know, Seattle's not been ultra impressive on offense all year.
No. But
their
defensively
kept them. Yes.
Correct.
And they've kept them in games. And, you know, obviously I paid really close attention to this last week game was against my Patriots and, you know, came up on the losing end, but you know, it is what it is. It's that team is a better team than, you know, I think you or I were both not giving them much credit earlier. We didn't like what we saw, but I'm switching. I think that part of their issue earlier was Russell Wilson was really banged up. They showed, you know, some pictures earlier in the year where he had both ankles heavily taped. He barely could move. You know, now he's getting healthy. You know, this week his ankles aren't taped. He can move around in the pocket. Yeah, he's still not going to run downfield, but his game – the dynamic of his game is improving week to week. You know, they're a little banged up at the running back yet. You know, Thomas Rawls is supposedly coming back at some point. Who knows when? You know, that might help bolster the game. Michael, their other young running back, he played, but he was playing. I think he had a hamstring type thing going on. So, you know.
Wait a minute. You talk about Chris DeMichael.
He played in the game against New England, but they made a comment that he's still. He was what?
He was released tonight.
Why?
Yeah. No reason has been given. Not that
Are
I have
serious?
Seen yet. Yep. He was cut. He was cut by the Seattle Seahawks. In fact, I posted it. I posted it up on our fantasy page 2 hours ago. It came direct from NFL. Breaking news: Chris DeMichael released.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was shocked. So, you're speechless.
He was a huge part of their game.
I know.
I mean, from all year, he was, you know, as you said, he was their leading running back. I don't know.
I'm stunned
as to why they would just cut him.
When I first read it, and I haven't read any details.
Okay.
When I first
there's
saw
something,
it.
There's
when
something
I first
more
saw it,
going on here.
I thought it was disciplinary. I thought, hey, something went wrong here someplace.
Yeah,
you know,
I think you're right because
there's a team
I'm just
thing
reading.
Or something.
It's not a. It's absolutely nothing to do with money because any team that claims him gets him for the balance of his contract this year, which is a whopping $280,000, which in NFL, that's nothing. He was apparently a second-round pick in 2013, so he's not old. Yeah, I don't know. This has got to be some kind of – there's more to this story than we know.
Yep.
You don't just
yep.
cut this guy. Yeah, you don't just cut this guy straight out.
Yep, I thought the same thing. Excuse me, when I first read it, I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, you know, there's something here. There's a, I don't know, there's a gun issue, the who knows, something. There's something that the team went, no, we're not having this. Anyhow.
Mm.
Yeah, all right.
Wow, you blew me away with that one.
Sorry about that. I thought perhaps maybe you had had time to catch up on that one.
No, that I did not see. That must have happened late this afternoon.
No, well, I said it. I just posted it, and when I posted it, it had just been released from the NFL.
Okay.
So that was 2 hours ago. So.
Wow.
All right. We only got about 15 minutes here. I got two games I want to just touch on here real quick. Jump over to the Dallas Cowboys, who beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 35-30 on Sunday afternoon. That gave the Dallas Cowboys an 8-1 record. Dropped the Pittsburgh Steelers now, Brandon, to 4-5. Holy smokes. Dak Prescott was 22 of 32, 319 yards, two touchdowns, 121.7 passer rating. We can't speak enough about Elliott. 21 carries, 114 yards. Had himself another 95 yards, Elliott did, through the air. And had three touchdowns. Oh, dear God almighty. If this guy's not rookie of the year and maybe MVP, I don't know who is, honest to God. Dez Bryant had a touchdown and 116 yards. What's that? We lost you, Brandon. Don't know what you were saying.
You there? You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep, now I do.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened there. All of a sudden, it just really got cut out for me, too. You know, you were saying about MVP. That's the answer. Make Ezekiel Elliott the league MVP and give Rookie of the Year to Prescott because they both deserve something. You know what I mean? I don't know that you can do, you know, I don't think they would do, you know, MVP and Rookie of the Year to the same player. There's still a lot of season to be played too. So, you know, it may be early to be anointing those kind of, at least the MVP award, you know, there's probably going to be more people throwing their names in that as it goes.
Well, I mean, you could say, but holy smokes, Ezekiel Elliott's got 1,005 yards already.
Yep.
And nine touchdowns. I mean, that is just, he's averaging 112 yards a game. And that's just rushing yards on the ground. We're not counting, like, the 95 yards he got through the air is not counted in that. So,
right.
It's insane. Absolutely insane. But Dallas Cowboys, we've talked a lot already about the Dallas Cowboys. All right, let's forget about the Dallas Cowboys for a second. In the few minutes that we've got here to talk about this game, let's swing it over and take a look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, because at this point right now, the AFC North, and again, you're gonna come back at me. You're going to go, okay, wait, hold on. To back up the bus there, Fred, us, Mike, the Steelers are only a game behind. Baltimore leads the division right now, 5-4. Pittsburgh is 4-5. Cincinnati is 3-5-1. And Marv Lewis's name is coming up as being a coach who's on the hot seat. 3-5-1 for the Cincinnati Bengals. Forget the Cleveland Browns. You know, they belong in a high school division. Pittsburgh Steelers, what do you make of this team? You know, you're talking about teams you can't put your finger on today. You know, can't quite put my finger on this team. Can't quite put my finger on. How about the Pittsburgh Steelers? I can't quite put my finger on them. Just when you think they're a good, solid team, they're 4-5.
Yeah, but I will take away from this game. This was a very good game, a very good game to watch. And
it
Pittsburgh
was.
Did not play bad. They just got beat by a better team. You know what I mean? They were their defense did okay. You know, they weren't great, obviously, giving up 35 points. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, a potential MVP, rookie of the year, guys on the other side. So, you know, if I'm Pittsburgh, I take this as a moral victory, because, you know, Ben Roethlisberger came back from having knee surgery after 2 weeks, you know, a bye, and then he was back playing. Played okay. You know, I'm not going to say he was great, but his numbers are not horrible at all. You know, the Baltimore Ravens, they're not on the same level as Pittsburgh. They may be a game ahead in the rankings right now, but eye test wise, Pittsburgh's a better team. And I think they will, now that, you know, you got Le'Veon Bell, who missed the first couple games with the suspension. He's, you know, finally starting to get on track a little. You know, Roethlisberger's back from the injury. You know, he's going to continue to get better. I think Dallas will be okay, or Pittsburgh is going to be okay. You know what I mean? They're benefiting or lucky right now that the rest of the division isn't playing well either.
Yep,
I mean, because Cincinnati, without Cincinnati there, you know, Cincinnati could be really, you know, if they were playing like, you know, everybody expected them to be playing by now, they'd be really putting the screws to Pittsburgh, but really they're not, you know? So, you know, Pittsburgh's in not bad shape. I think when it's all plays out, it's going to be, you know, kind of what we expect. I think Pittsburgh's going to win the division. I don't know if that tie is enough to help Cincinnati get a wild card, because they're so bad.
Oh, I don't know.
Record wise in that West.
Yeah. That doesn't even come into play at this point.
You might see two teams in the West get wild cards. You might see some combination of the Chiefs, Raiders, and Broncos. You know, one will win the division. The other two may be the wild card teams when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's going to affect it, obviously, as we keep talking about, they do have to play each other yet.
The division games.
Yeah, they probably have, you know, at least two games against each other. You know what I mean? Like, so they're going to have some losses in there. But right now, boy, in the AFC, that's a division for sure.
The Ben Roethlisberger, 37 of 46, 408 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 125.4 passer rating. If you had Ben Roethlisberger on your fantasy team, you certainly can't be complaining, even in a loss, for sure. They didn't get the ground game though going. Le'Veon Bell was really stymied by the Dallas defense. 17 carries, 57 yards, 3.4 yards per rush. So not terribly productive there. If I'm not mistaken,
I think
one of those games that I remember hearing there were something like 5 or 6 lead changes in this game. So as you point out, it was a good game to watch.
Yeah, it was. And Dallas was primarily leading. In other words, like, Pittsburgh constantly had to answer Dallas. So, you know, they were never in a position where they had the lead. You know what I mean? They had the lead, but they never were, you know, Dallas would get the ball back and then they would score. You know what I mean? It was kind of like a back and forth thing, but, you know, Pittsburgh never had the luxury of being the team in the lead with the ball. You know what I mean? They always got the ball back after Dallas scored and then they had to do something. So they really were, you know, kind of, I think that possibly could have limited the running game, because it kind of became a shootout type situation. I mean, when you got two teams scored in the 30s,
right,
that's a lot of points. You know, that's 65 points in the game. And I don't think either one of these teams has a particularly bad defense. I think it just, you know, it's just the way it played out. You know what I mean? The offense. I mean, they, clearly Roethlisberger, you know, putting up 400 yards, you know, they were moving the ball. So, you know, it's not like Dallas was just, you know, sitting on the pass. They had to be, you know, they kept him honest. I mean, he had 17 carries. That's, you know, when you're around the 20 carry mark, which they, you know, they say overall, because I guess they're counting the Roethlisberger had a 1 yard run, but you know, 20 carries is kind of like the minimum you got to see in a game just to keep the other side honest. So, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the deal is with the running game. I mean, because the first three games when Le'Veon Bell was out on suspension, D'Angelo Williams looked like a world beater. Now, granted, yep. I know he's hurt right now, but you would think that, you know, if D'Angelo Williams could run behind this line, Le'Veon Bell should be even better because he's quicker, more elusive, you know, you name it kind of thing. So I don't know. We'll see.
I kept saying it, if you remember. I mean, that all through those games that D'Angelo Williams was ripping up the yards, I kept coming on here and reminding everybody, can you imagine what this team's going to be like when they get Le'Veon Bell? Can you imagine what they're going to be like when they get Le'Veon Bell?
Yep.
They get Le'Veon Bell, and they haven't exactly set the world on fire on the ground.
They
so
kind of
I
fell
don't
apart.
Know. Exactly. Exactly. So, all right, before we get out of here, I do want to go touch on your guys. We talked a little bit about it, but let's get into it.
Do we have to?
Just a couple of minutes. Anyhow, that's the Seattle Seahawks. Who went into Foxborough and beat the New England Patriots 31-24. Seattle's record now 6-2-1. New England at 7-2. Russell Wilson, you know, you pointed it out earlier, perhaps maybe suffering from some nagging injuries early on in the season. Didn't seem to look like it the other day, I guess. 25-37, 348 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interception, 124.6. Passer rating. Tom Brady, 23 of 32, 316, no touchdowns, 1 INT, and a 90.1 passer rating.
Interesting stat. But that's the first interception the Patriots quarterbacks, all three of them, have thrown in the year.
That's amazing. That's amazing considering, as you point out, there were three quarterbacks that have played at different points during the season. LeGarrette Blount, fantasy dream right there. 3 touchdowns for the New England Patriots on the ground. Only 69 yards, but 21 carries there and the 3 touchdowns. Seattle introduced us, I guess, to their new running back. Maybe this is why they cut Christian Michael, because they're thinking if Thomas Rawls is coming back, what do we do with CJ Procese? 17 carries, 66 yards. And I'm going to tell you, and he had another 87 yards in the air. I've heard a lot about this guy since we saw him the other day against your New England Patriots. Maybe this was the, I don't know. You know, I don't know what the thinking was. Do you cut a guy simply because all of a sudden you got some new wonder kid on the, yeah, exactly
no.
right. Exactly. You don't know.
There's
exactly
more to that
right.
story.
I agree with you. Procise
played a great game, you know, but they even said during the broadcast that Christian Michael was nursing a hamstring. So he was hurt, and that's why he wasn't necessarily the lead featured back. I think there was more to that story than we know right now. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Procise is going to be the guy, I guess, you know, until Rawls comes back. I don't know who – Procise is kind of a smaller back, though. He kind of reminds me a lot of like a Darren Sproles. So I don't know if he can – take the pounding of a every down back kind of thing, he looks like he'd be effective in that Darren Sproles kind of role, you know? So maybe that's their plan. You know, we got Rawls coming back. He can be our pounded in there back, and Procise will be the switch up, you know, the change of pace, catch out of the backfield, you know, quick hitter like Sproles.
Right.
He didn't
look to me to have, he wasn't quite as small as Darren Sproles. He looked more like the physique of more like a McCoy, but with the ability to be a receiving back if he needed to be, which obviously he did.
He's not bulky. He's a very lean. He may be a little taller than Sproles, but he doesn't have the – he doesn't seem to have the bulk or mass on him. You know what I mean? That's what that's what would question me of him being an every down back. He just looks small.
Interesting.
He might be taller than Sproles, but he doesn't look – I bet you he doesn't weigh much different.
Interesting. Because, I mean, in this game against your team, and you don't have a bad defense over there. He had 17 carries, and he had seven receptions. So that's getting pretty darn close to almost being an every down back, I'll tell you.
No, I hear you. I would just be concerned about over the, you know, the course of the season, you know, game in and game out. That's why I think I just don't understand why they cut Michael. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. There's got to be more than we know right now, because we've talked about other teams and how injuries at running back has hurt them, like the Packers. I mean, you're really going to get rid of a guy who's been productive all season just because another guy's close to being healthy? Come on now. There's more than we know.
I hear you. It didn't make sense to me either.
And besides, most teams carry, you know, 3, 4, 5 running backs anyway.
Right. Right.
Depends, you know, if one's a punt returner kind of thing, or, you know, one's a, like I said, a special teams guy or something. I don't understand. He was not an issue money wise. So there, it has to be something else. There's more to this than we know.
Got about 2 minutes here before I cut it off real quick. Patriots lost. No big deal though, right? 7-2. No big deal that they lost this game.
No, there's going to, you know, we looked at their schedule earlier, and this was one of the, you know, tougher games. They got a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. It's good for, as a Patriots fan, I never want to see them lose. I just know that them losing usually is a good thing. It's a motivator thing. It gives Belichick something to chew them out about, you know, gives them some film, you know, to, you know, push his point more, you know. Sometimes when they win too much, they get lazy. So I think this is if they're going to have a loss, this is a good loss to take. You know, I hate that they lose it. I don't like when they lose at home, you know. But you know what? That's even more motivation for Belichick and the rest of the coaching staff to drive home. So, yeah, I agree. You know, you never want to see your team lose, but, you know, when you're 7-2, and you're, what, 3 games in front of the rest of your division? It's like, yeah, okay. This ain't going to be a, you know, break, you know, deal breaker. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're 2 games ahead of Miami. Miami still sucks. I ain't afraid of them.
All right, there you go. Well, we broke it down for you, folks, as best we could. Anyhow, for week 10. I can tell you right now, there will be plenty of NFL chit-chat on the agenda for Thursday night as well. So you're going to want to turn right back around here in about 2 nights from now and be with us for our Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, number 270 coming your way, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live right here. And we will get into a lot more of everything else going on all around the world of sports. And then I'll be back with you on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for another relaxed Frat House Saturday. All right. There you go. Many thanks to everybody that's been listening in this evening. Hey, plenty of sports out there. There's got to be some NHL hockey and NBA, I'm sure. So get out there and enjoy your sports.